I'd like to call to session the March 19th, 2009 session of the House Subcommittee on Workforce Development. Good morning to everyone. We're going to be having an informational hearing here this morning. And Kevin, if you would, please give us some background. Before I have you do that, though, I just want to thank both Kevin and Keith for the hustle that they put on to put this informational hearing together. It was not an easy task, knowing that we have a number of extremely busy folks who are going to be sharing information with us today. So I not only appreciate the efforts of staff, but also those who will be testifying today on very short notice. With that, Kevin.
Thank you, Chair Whip. Members of the committee, you'll recall that last Thursday we were approached at the end of the hearing about possible stimulus money coming to the state of Oregon with respect to the forest as part of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act 2009, recently signed into law. As I understand it, the primary focus of some of the stimulus money that would be coming here concerning the forest is for purposes of reducing the threat of catastrophic wildfire, and specifically jobs to accomplish that feat. As I understand it as well, the primary focus of this is not only job creation, which is very pertinent to what we're doing, but also to help promote economic recovery, utilizing the natural resources we have here. What we've put together today is some individuals, both from the Forest Service, the Department of Forestry, as well as the Youth Conservation Corps and Northwest Youth Corps, to discuss the program. As we flesh this out a little bit more, there are some projects that are apparently in place, or rather going to be in place, and if I'm understanding correctly, and this is what I'm searching for, just a little more clarification for, these are some of the programs. Apparently there may be additional programs, and like I said, I'll put that with a big caveat that if I'm off the misspeaking, that I will be quickly corrected. But again, the purpose of this is to explain to the committee what's going on, and I think also to the extent there's something that the committee may be able to do to move forward, possible prescriptions that may be offered up. So I think that's where we're at.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to call up for the first panel, Cal Joyner, Deputy Regional Forester, U.S. Forest Service Region 6. And Cal, did Gary Larson come down today, do you know?
Not that I know of, no.
Okay, all right, fine. Well, welcome.
Marvin,
would you like to come up as a panel?
Sure. Rick, we can do that if that's all right.
Okay, that would be fine. Love to have both of you as a panel. Marvin Brown, our Chief Forester here in the state of Oregon, welcome to both of you. Thank you for making yourselves available on such quick notice. We understand there's money headed our way, and our subcommittee understands that there's a potential for job creation here. And we just wanted to see where we were at that, what opportunities we might have, and what information in that regard you could share with us. So thank you very much.
It's my pleasure to be here, Chairman Witt and the remainder members of the committee. Actually, the money's already arrived.
All right.
And the jobs are already beginning. The Forest Service is pleased and proud to be part of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. It fits well with our mission as an agency that tends to rise up when there is some kind of a calamity. Usually it's a fire or a flood or hurricane or even 9/11. We had an incident command team on the ground within 48 hours at 9/11 in New York City, helping them organize their emergency services. So it feels really good to us to be able to move our work towards and reorient our work to create jobs in economically distressed communities. Nationwide, the Forest Service received $1.15 billion out of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. That's partitioned into two large buckets. One is capital improvement and maintenance, and the other is wildland fire mitigation. So the work under the Act will reduce the threat of catastrophic wildfire to communities and forests across the landscape, improve forest health, move the nation closer to energy independence through the use of woody biomass, and then also deals directly with reducing our environmental footprint in the sense of roads, trails, buildings, those kind of things. Okay. So within the there were $650 million that's capital investment in maintenance, and the $500 that was wildland fire mitigation. That latter category is cut in half. $250 million is for the national forests themselves, and then $250 million for state and private lands. And Chief Forester Brown will talk about the $250 million that's state and private lands in particular. So we sent out a call letter a few weeks back asking our field units to identify the following kinds of projects that could receive funds under the Act with the following criteria. Create or retain jobs in economically distressed areas. Create or retain sustainable jobs. Create or retain jobs that help to sustain the health, diversity, and productivity of the nation's forests and grasslands. Leverage other resources to create jobs. Create jobs that invest or leverage the investments of partners in wood-to-energy or biomass projects. Create jobs that contribute to sustainable operations, including reducing footprint of infrastructure or greener operations of administrative and recreation sites, roads, trails, and other kinds of facilities. So the thing that we all had in common was the creation of jobs, which is unusual for us. We typically distribute our money more like spreading peanut butter across 155 national forests. And in this case, it's actually focused towards where there is economic distress and where we can create jobs and where it can be done very quickly. And so we put out a call letter and said, gave the field basically 2 weeks to turn it around and send the projects in. And we asked them to identify projects that could be implemented within 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and then also to pull out what you could do in a little over a week, just to see how fast could we go. So this is stuff that's shovel-ready, readier and readiest, really, is what it comes down to. This is not for planning. It's for implementation that creates jobs. Our orientation is not towards federal employment. It is towards private employment. Permanent employment within the agency may spike up slightly during the two-year lifespan of these funds, but it's intended to go right back down to where it was when we started. So it's, again, just recognizing we may be able to use it for the purpose of training some young people to come into the agency to replace all of us gray hairs that are about to go out. We'll take advantage of that. But the size of the federal workforce and the Forest Service will be static in the sense of where we were after the pulse comes through. So the types of projects that we're focusing on are abandoned mine lands, facilities, forest health, hazardous fuels reduction, watershed enhancement, roads and trails. So in response to a nationwide call, we had our field essentially sent in $6 billion worth of projects for the $1.15 billion we have to distribute. And it would have been more if we hadn't put a cap on it. There was much more that could have been done. There's that much more that's shovel ready if the funds are become available, if there's a second stimulus bill, if you will. Our region, which covers Oregon and Washington, received 1,300 proposals from either agency or other partners. So far, we've had the first 10% of the funds that the agency has. Those projects have been approved. And they were done based on the number of jobs created in economically distressed areas and the ability to implement within, at that point, we're trying to say 7 days of approval. Oregon and Washington have received three of those projects out of that first 10%. There's one project in the state of Washington, the Olympic Peninsula Structure Restoration Project, for about $500,000, focusing on improving recreation sites. In the state of Oregon, a large project, the 6-County Hazardous Fuels Reduction Project. $2 million will be spent in each of the following counties: Deschutes, Douglas, Jefferson, and Josephine for hazardous fuels reduction work. $1 million will be spent in each of Curry and Crook counties. I have a little hand-scrawled note that tells me that we've begun to award those contracts this week. Two contracts in Deschutes and Jefferson counties totaling $1.9 million were actually awarded this week. We actually expect to see people in the woods within 4 or 5 days doing tree thinning and biomass removal. The contracts in Curry and Josephine counties will be signed by Friday. And I believe the contracts in Douglas and Crook counties will be coming along very quickly also. The intent is to have them, all those done in terms of getting the money moved within a week. There's also another large project where the funds are here and the process has begun. As I understand it, there will be a step that will actually move through the Oregon legislature here, one of the committees, the Ways and Means Committee, at one point here in the next few weeks. That's the Oregon Youth Employment Initiative. That's a statewide youth employment program involving every county in the state. It's focused on natural resource conservation and restoration on public and private lands. The initiative will put 1,500 youth to work and will expend $6.5 million in existing school programs and summer employment programs. The initiative will be administered through a grant from the Forest Service to the Oregon Youth Conservation Association. So that's what, and those are already moving. So that's actually what Gary could have talked about more eloquently and at more depth. But that's a direct partnership between the Forest Service and the state of Oregon. The other 90% of the Forest Service's allotment will be decided in the next couple of weeks. Those projects are back in Washington. We're expecting to hear very soon. And they run the full gamut of the kinds of projects that I mentioned earlier in terms of what's eligible that's been proposed. And I think I'll wind it up with that and just say thanks for the opportunity to come in and talk about it, and I can answer any questions you may have, or you may want to hold those until after Marvin presents.
Thank you, Forrester Joyner. I think what we'll do is have Marvin proceed, and then we'll ask questions of the panel.
Thank you, Chair Witt, the members of the committee. I'm Marvin Brown. I'm the director of the Department of Forestry. And yeah, it did make a little sense for Cal and I to be here together because, as he said, the money coming to the Forest Service, about half is going to the forest systems, national forest lands, and about half is coming through the state and private forestry program, which are funds that come to the state forestry agencies like ours for a variety of purposes. We were asked to submit proposals for that those dollars. I asked the staff to get really aggressive, and we did. We submitted $250 million worth of projects. We could have spent everything that was available for the whole nation. Obviously, that all didn't get forwarded to Washington, D.C., but as you see on the back of this page I handed out, right now there's about $28 million that has been forwarded from the region to the Washington, D.C. office for consideration. And at this point, we haven't got any word on what parts of those will be funded. We do have about $7 million already in hand from some stimulus project funding that was in the works before the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Those dollars will be spent on fuels reduction and community wildfire protection plan implementation. And which mainly means helping landowners thin their forests to make them more fireproof in areas, urban interface areas where there might be some fire problems is kind of the big thrust of that work. You can see on that second page what the range of projects under consideration are. A lot of it deals with fuel mitigation and hazardous fuel reduction. There's also a proposal there to take our most aggressive approach on sudden oak death, and we hope that gets very high consideration because that is a priority, and right now it's something that's been dropped out of our state budget just because of the budget problems that we're having, and that's an important one to us. In addition,
Representative Esquivel had a question here.
What exactly did you just say, a sudden oak death? What is that?
There, Chair Wood and Representative Esquivel, there's
is that that thing that's coming up from California that's
correct.
Coming up into Oregon, creeping up and killing our trees?
Correct. Correct. Tan oak. It's a disease that impacts tan oak. It is coming up from California. We've got a quarantine area in southeastern Oregon right now, and it has an impact both on the logging industry and also the nursery industry, because the nursery industry ends up with some certification, disease-free certification problems coming out of a quarantine area. Our approach has been,
Yes, Representative Holvey.
Thank you. Representative Esquivel brought it up, I know that issue has been around for quite a long time. Long time, as long as I've been in the legislature, and I'm just curious of the progress in stopping that particular disease. Or are we making progress on that, or is it still growing?
Chair Witt and Representative Hovey, we're making some progress, but it is growing. We've kind of revamped our eradication protocols, and essentially what you have to do is when you find an infected area is be very aggressive in removing host plants for a large area around that. And I can't remember if it's 5 acres or 10 acres or whatever, but essentially if you find an infected area, you try to get rid of all the tan oak within an area so that there's no host plant for the insect or the disease to keep moving. And we've had to change our protocols because the area we were using for treatment wasn't completely stopping the spots that we were finding in different places. Now, relative to California, we've done really well. They have areas that are completely infected. We're still just dealing with spots and pieces of counties. And if we were to receive this funding, we would initiate just very aggressive eradication treatment and hope to kind of make it go away, not permanently, but very seriously.
Thank you. I appreciate that update.
Sure.
Thank you.
You've got the list of other kinds of projects here. I'll just say there's a few other things that we're trying to connect up to. In an effort to take full advantage of this, we actually, Tom Savage, our district forester in Astoria, was given a six-month assignment to just coordinate all of this work across the department. And we're working with a couple of the national forests in Oregon to actually help them administer a few of their projects. I think right now the Umpqua National Forest and the Rogue Siskiyou both have some signed agreements for us to help them implement some of the work they're doing. There's talk about others around the state where we can cooperate and be help each other be successful. We're trying to do that. The Natural Resource Conservation Service, in sort of an unrelated opportunity, is receiving a fair amount of money to provide forest owners more cost share dollars for treatments under what's called the EQIP program, and those dollars can be used for tree planting, for thinning, for a variety of work, and they've come to us and asked us to help them administer that and make sure that Oregon landowners can access as much of that money as possible. We are also working with OWEB on some NOAA fisheries economic stimulus opportunities that deal with improving salmon habitat on some areas, such as, you know, removing fish barrier culverts and things like that. And the director of the Department of Energy, Mike Graney, and I have had just a brief conversation about what might be some urban forestry opportunities through the community energy block development grants that they will be administering that are part of the stimulus package. So I think I'll stop there and see what other questions folks might have.
Thank you very, very much. Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I can kind of put a face on the dollars, I've heard a lot of talk about the youth programs. Are all of these dollars going to youth programs, or is there going to be any... And I don't see Wheeler, Grant, Harney counties listed out here where my real unemployment rate out there is approaching 30%. And a lot of those are displaced foresters. Are we going to be getting some of those people back to work over the next 24 months, or who are we putting to work?
We are certainly hoping to contribute to that, Vice Chairman Huffman. We have... The majority of the funds are still unallocated, and those are sitting back in Washington. There are projects that are proposed in the counties you just mentioned, Harney and Grant in particular. Wheeler, I believe so, but I don't know that for a fact. I'm expecting those proposals to be approved, at least some portion of them, in the next couple weeks. The projects that have been approved so far were simply ones that were far enough along with existing partnerships already identified or they are contracts that could be modified, existing contracts, because they really were the ones that we could basically do something with in 7 to 10 days. So I wouldn't judge what's been approved so far as being indicative of what will be approved once the whole project process works its way through. We certainly have a laser focus on Harney and Grant counties in particular.
Please.
When we talk about biomass, what is going to be done with the fuel that's taken out of the forest? Because we don't particularly have a broad base of biomass fuel facilities around, so, and we're probably not going to be transporting this hundreds of miles. Where's this fuel that's going to be taken out of the forest? Where's it going to go?
I can answer part of that, Chair Witt and Vice Chair Huffman, and just to answer a little more of your first question, too, about who we're putting to work. I'd probably say describe the majority of the folks who are going to be working because of these dollars are contract woods workers. Folks that are out there running chainsaws, you know, pulling material out of the woods, you know, implementing the different treatments on the ground, and they're going to be, you know, there are lots of those contract woods workers available in the state right now. So that's probably the bulk of the workforce that's going to be benefited.
I don't want to sidetrack you, but just a little side note here. If there's any way that we can not bring a contractor from Douglas County over to Grant County, if we could kind of keep them regionalized so that they actually do help that region, that would be much appreciated.
I appreciate what you're saying. There's a group of contractors in the state, and they generally develop local workforces that, you know, it depends on the project. They may have to draw on some additional folks, but they're scattered around.
If I could build on that a little bit. What we're planning to do is when we actually get the next wave of projects approved, we'll go a little bit slower in terms of how we go about getting those implemented. We're going to take a look at what we can do to break them up if we can, to provide a diversity of opportunities potentially in terms of size and scale of project, and hopefully employ different sectors of the population in different locations. You know, we have all those kinds of requirements you know about in terms of how we go about doing our contracting in the sense of the competition requirements. But we're trying to do as much as we can to actually distribute the work fairly evenly throughout the areas that are affected. With our monies, the capital improvement and maintenance funds, those are dealing with roads, bridges, trails, fish passage, those kinds of things. So those are going to go to contracting firms that do heavy equipment kind of work or can have the specialized skills that it will take to convert an existing facility from its current energy use pattern to a greener kind of technology. So it'll be also additional work for that sector of Oregonians as well as the woods workers that Marvin described. Our monies are split about $650 million nationally and $500 million in those two kinds of funds. I'm not sure what our final take will actually look like.
And you realize I'm just getting my plug in here.
I understand.
Trying to assist in the process. And then, Marvin, the fuels part coming out of the forest.
Good question. There's not that many fully operative biomass facilities. There's a few around the state where there's not going to be the market to use it for biomass. It's probably going to be piled and burnt in most cases. And biomass is one of the issues that we've tried to promote over the last 5 or 6 years, and you know, made some headway. There's a school and enterprise that's using biomass. There's you know, cogen plants that have been built alongside some sawmills recently and over the past. I know Douglas County Commissioner is real active in trying to promote a biomass facility in that part of the world, and we try to help where we can, but certainly there's not near the capacity to absorb all that's out there.
Thank you. If I could add a little bit, there is $50 million, up to $50 million out of the $1.15 billion can be spent for biomass grants. So we are going to see I know we have proposals coming in from around the country for different kinds of facilities, either augmenting existing ones or perhaps being part of the construction of yet others.
Are we going to be looking at Warm Springs, for example, is probably about as close to shovel-ready on a biomass facility as anybody. So are we going to be looking at those projects that are further along that actually have a realistic chance for those $50 million?
I honestly don't know what was proposed, sir.
Okay.
I have Representative Esquivel followed by Representative Holby.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
When we go about these contracts, and I think this question needs to be asked in front of everyone here, are we doing some kind of certification to make sure that these people are residents of our country, that they are in fact hopefully local workers, and what kind of a certification process do we use? Because if you're talking about people that, example, tree planting, things of this nature, I'm not sure that we have a very extensive way to prove the legal status of the people there. And I'll be candid with you. I want this to go to Oregon workers. I want it to go to our youth. I want it to go to the people here in the state of Oregon. How do you do that?
There are federal regulations that talk about the ownership of the companies that are allowed to bid first, and they certify who their employees are. We are at times struggling with our ability to ensure that all of the people that are employed in the field actually are American citizens. You all heard about the issues with the Pinheiros in California. I'm not going to try to hide that. So one of the things that we do is work with our contracting folks to ensure that they're enforcing the regulations that are associated with the kinds of people that can be employed under a federal contract. And then they work also with the field inspectors to ensure that folks are also properly certified. The intent of the work is to go to American citizens.
Paula, please.
I would make a suggestion to the federal government when they write these contracts that if they do, in fact, run into an employer that disregards this criteria, then there needs to be a dramatic ramification and disciplinary action toward that individual, and I mean monetarily.
We have regulations in place, Representative Esquivel, that deal directly with that. We have ability to breach contracts and to put contracts in abeyment until the contractor is in compliance.
Well, okay. That's a different way of saying it. Okay. One more question, please. Instead of burning, when are we going to get back up to where we're starting to chip and put that residue in the forest itself so the nutrients can get back into the forest? I suggested that in 1978 and was kind of laughed at by the Forest Service. But I see now we're finally starting doing that. It reminds me of my dad that said he was a logger, and he said, you know, he told the Forest Service back in the 50s, 1957, in fact, that you shouldn't be clear-cutting all this stuff. You should be doing that very selectively. And they kind of laughed at him at that point. But it took them 50 years. They finally figured out he was pretty correct for an old logger. But when are we going to start chipping this material instead of burning it? Because I think the worst thing we can do is burn material in our forest. I think if you chipped it, you put it on the bed of the forest, those nutrients would go back into the soil and it would help reforestation.
It's a good question, Chair Witt and Representative Esquivel. There is a limited number of contractors around the state that operate what are called slash busters now. They're kind of a takeoff on those pieces of equipment that you see that prune road right-of-ways, really ugly, you know, kind of a big arm,
brush hog,
but these are made specifically to go in and thin a lot of the typical kinds of stands you see in eastern Oregon and take a tree and chip it right down to the stump, and it all stays right there in the woods. So there is some of that. It's expensive equipment, so it's not available for every project for, you know, the extensive amount of this kind of work that needs to be done. But you see more of them coming online as more of that work becomes predictable.
Example, you're talking about dog hair over there with lodgepole, pine, and tamarack in that specific area. Do we not have a fellow buncher that we couldn't grab that stuff, put it onto a chipper right there on site, and then take chips right out of there or hog fuel?
We could, Chair Witt and Representative Esquivel. The problem you run into with that low-value material is the transportation cost. And it's really difficult to pay the transportation cost to get that kind of material to either, say, a pulp mill or a biomass facility. A lot of it's not real suitable for pulp because you have to have clean chips by and large. It could go to a biomass facility, but, you know, you're talking about material that might be worth $18 a ton that takes costs $30 a ton to transport. So.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Esquivel brought up a couple of points that I wasn't going to talk about, but I know that, you know, in speaking about, you know, certifying the companies and the workers that are on projects, I know that, you know, through prevailing wage projects, they have requirements for certified payrolls, you know, as a check to make sure people are being paid as employees and that they have names and addresses. Just, I don't know if the Forest Service does that, but not really my question, and nor it, something I'm really tracking. But my question is, I happen to sit on a rack for the Siuslaw National Forest and work with the secure schools and rural communities monies, the Title II monies that come into that. And I know they spend a lot of effort and time trying to coordinate amongst counties and the Forest Service, you know, and looking at invasive species, for example. And I didn't hear any talk of invasive species. It may be embedded in here. But not about that specifically, but I'm curious whether the Forest Service considers the efforts that are being done in with those monies to try to, I guess, leverage good outcomes. You probably do. I just thought I'd ask that question, especially with this money coming in, whether or not there's thoughts about you know, leveraging the projects so they are more effective, I guess, because we have other, you know, that's a whole different pot of money, and I don't know if it's not really a large pot, probably comparatively, but anyway, I'm just kind of curious about any kind of coordination amongst the different pots of money for targeting issues or problems to get better outcomes.
Chairman Witt and Representative Holvey, that's a great question. We have our normal appropriation of funds that for fiscal year 2009 that we are currently in. We have an initial allocation of those funds out to the forests. We have a variety of other funds that have come in, some flood abatement kind of funding, funding that's associated strictly with legacy roads. There was some fuels money that came through us that Marvin mentioned a little while ago. All of those funds are allocated to the field. And then we also have the omnibus bills coming through with our final appropriation for 2009. And we have these ARRA projects coming. Once we actually can see that whole landscape, then we're going to probably distribute monies back and forth between the regular program of work and the ARRA so that we can optimize the leverage that we can get from all of the existing projects and programs, whether it's RAC or any other that we can actually work together on, as Marvin was trying to describe a little while ago. We didn't talk specifically about invasive species because the language of the ARRA really didn't cover the full gamut of activities that the Forest Service typically has. It did not have wildlife enhancement and watershed enhancement or invasive species work on their own right as a project type. We were able to reach towards invasive species under the guise of forest health, but only with the wildland mitigation funds. We could look at wildlife enhancement or watershed enhancement, only those projects that were in association with a capital improvement or maintenance project, because that's the way the bill was written. We were working, I was on assignment in Washington, D.C. for a couple months, January and February. The three-page letter that came out, the call letter, I helped to write that letter while I was back in Washington. And we worked with the committees to try to get a broader spectrum of potential projects as eligible under the Act. And they focused in on what they thought were the priorities, and that's what came out in the capital investment and maintenance as well as wildland fire mitigation funding.
Thank you. That's a good explanation, I guess.
Rep. Representative Denbrough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just following up on that, Cal. So, and you know, you mentioned that the goal is to try to leverage these short-term projects into more sustainable kinds of employment opportunities. So, is that what you've just been talking about? I mean, is that the kind of thing that we're hoping to do to sort of interlace these projects potentially with ongoing projects? And how are we going to go beyond just, you know, the model of short-term contract employment to more sustainable jobs in the forest?
Chairman Witt and Representative Denbrough, the way we'll best be able to do that is going to be the linking of our normal program of work and our existing web of partnerships with through the RACs, through the state, through a variety of collaborative groups that each National Forest and BLM unit already sponsor and work with. The ARRA funds will be a pulse of work. When you try to spread $1.15 billion amongst 155 National Forests, if you just use the forest as the divider, you know, that's less than $10 million apiece. A typical national forest runs on a budget of between $10 and $40 million. So you begin to see the scale of what we're talking about here. This is a pulse of work meant to get people back to work short term. Longer term, it's going to take the partnerships and the leverage that we have between the federal government, state governments, and county government, as well as private industry and public citizen groups, to pull together to figure out how do we do things in a more sustainable way. This particular act just gets people back to working again.
Please.
Chair, if I could answer part of that, too. Cal and I were here during the summer talking to an interim committee about the Federal Forest Advisory Committee that was sponsored by the Board of Forestry at the direction of the governor. And that group developed is a very diverse group of folks. It included, you know, some folks from the environmental law community, from the Nature Conservancy, a couple of industry CEOs and county officials and everything, and they actually developed a consensus report. I mean, they all came to agreement on what they felt were the significant issues facing federal lands in Oregon and what some of the solutions were for dealing with those issues. I think it's I'd be happy to get all of you a copy of the report if you'd like, because I feel like it's a really excellent work. But since that report was finalized, what we've been doing is pulling together more of an implementation group that includes Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, Sustainable Northwest, Oregon Business Council, Nature Conservancy, a whole host of folks. And one of the primary things that we're going to be doing is promoting more of these collaborative groups that Cal talked about, folks at the local level who can design large-scale forest improvement projects and come to agreement about what those mean and try to get those projects to a more implementable stage from the standpoint of diverse interests agreeing, and that's really going to be the focus of this implementation group. And it's embraced by the whole community, the whole spectrum of interest, and it needs support. You know, it needs, and we're not going to get that in this budget environment, I'm afraid. I think it's good work, and I'd be happy to send you a copy of what we're looking at.
Mm-hmm. And just to follow up, Mr. Chair, yeah, and you know, if the legislature could be kept in the loop on, you know, the partnerships that are happening, and also, you know, when we authorized a first round of some capital construction in the legislature last month, we asked that there be, you know, very good oversight of who the workforce was. You know, are these projects being done by local workers? You know, kinds of things you heard about earlier. And, you know, it would be great if we could be kept abreast of that, too.
Certainly.
Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Just kind of a follow-up on Representative Denbrough as far as the workers that we get. And I touched on that in my first question about, you know, hopefully there'll be native to the counties that really desperately need the employment. But this goes back to the question about the contracting part of it, and I know that we have rules and regulations in place as far as how we go about getting bids for contracts, but I also know that oftentimes when we're trying to get boots on the ground in 7 days or 14 days, there's a tendency you're under pressure to get a contractor to get out there and start doing the job for the performa. What's the process in this case? I'm assuming you have a list of pre-qualified, pre-certified contractors that can do business with the state or the feds. What are you doing right now to solicit contracts or bids for these contracts?
Chair Witt and Vice Chair Huffman, we do have a really active fire crew contracting program that we implement already, and we'll be drawing on that, not necessarily on the same contract because that's strictly about firefighting, but drawing on that process to access a lot of the same kinds of people and the same companies, I'm sure. We also, how much I should divulge here, but we have working relationships with folks like the Douglas Forest Protection District and the Coos Forest Protection District, which are actually not state government programs. They work in very close coordination with us, and we can develop cooperative arrangements with them, and they can be very nimble in their parts of the world, much more nimble than the state can be a lot of times, and getting things done. And it works. It's a real nice entrepreneurial kind of relationship we have there. But we just use whatever means we can to try to get the work done quickly.
I just wanted to make sure that I think most of us had heard a story in the last couple of weeks of one agency that got some of the bonding stimulus money that we approved a month or so ago, and there wasn't a posting of any sort to gather bids for some of the deferred maintenance projects that we were told that the agency was making calls to a few contractors saying, would you like to have some work or bid on this? And so I would just like to know that even though we're in a rush to get people to work, we're still following the process.
If I could respond to that, Chairman Witt and
please.
Vice Chairman Huffman. In our situation, we have requirements for federal contracting that requires a person to be registered, pre-certified. The work that we've done so far has been principally with existing arrangements and existing instruments, and then modifying those to allow the work to be added on to an existing contract or grant or agreement. When the next wave of projects comes out, however, which did not have the same kind of let's get this done really quickly kind of mode of thinking on it, that's where we'll be able to take a look at how do we diversify who can successfully bid. We've put together a two-page primer on how do you get yourself eligible to be a federal contractor, and individual national forests are putting on those kinds of workshops as we speak to help folks understand how do they get themselves registered, how do they get themselves in the queue so they can compete for the work. And then we're also committed to the way we implement it to the degree that we can, that makes sense for the job. Try to break things up so we'll have some disparate size packages of work so that different levels of individual could potentially bid. So we're not sure how we're going to do that, but we're going to make every effort we can to actually do that and ensure that it's not all going to one sector.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Colby?
I just thought I'd offer from my experience with the Forest Service, they do put out requests for proposals where those projects are sometimes not exactly apples to apples, and they're evaluated based on the money, of course, but also the value that is seen in the project itself. And so it's not a normal bidding process on a specific project always.
That sounds like a stewardship contract that you're describing.
Right,
yes,
right.
That's best value, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm very pleased to hear that we're going to be treating sudden oak death syndrome. I just think that's critically important, and the risk that we have to our oak savannas could be devastating. So thank you for putting a high priority on that. Marvin, I'm also glad to hear that Tom Savage is going to be your statewide coordinator, having watched him in action during a couple of very severe natural disasters. I know firsthand that he's a very can-do individual, that he has the respect of his fellow workers as well as of all the communities in which he works. And I know that that's a person that can rise to action in a very short order. So a great point person there. We've had several of the members have discussed kind of the transition from short-term jobs to long-term, and I know, Cal, I've along with the Forestry Department have toured some of the pilot projects that have been conducted by the Forest Service in the Umatilla, and I saw examples there where there was an attempt to bundle some projects so that we could potentially keep people working for a longer period of time, not only in terms of number of years, but throughout the different seasons in any given year. And I'm wondering if any of these projects might lend themselves to bundling, so that if we were to hire someone who the feller buncher that Representative Esquivel was talking about. So maybe they could be bunching trees for a three-month period and then move on to a shovel, perhaps, where they were doing stream-side restoration. Is there any possibility of longer-term employment, the bunching of jobs, and actually making a full-time career out of some of this?
I think, Chairman Witt, there's every opportunity for that. In the last 18 months, as a region of the Forest Service, we've developed a template, a model for a 10-year stewardship contract that we have now let in a couple different locations around Oregon. One deals with the sustained yield unit in Lakeview. They've done a similar one on the Umatilla. There's two in consideration on the Wallowa Whitman, and I believe that the Malheur is also have a couple that are either just about to be let or have been let. What those do is they're built on the concept of an indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity, IDIQ. And so that allows us to, every year, invest some monies in planning the next year's activities or the year's activities a couple years out, allows the successful bidder to know that work is coming, allows us to use our authorities with stewardship contracting that lets us basically offset the goods that are being pulled from the woods, the wood, with services such as that streamside restoration project you were describing, and bundle all that together. And it gives the contractor the flexibility to be able to figure out how do they keep people, the most number of people employed throughout the year that they can. So between those authorities and then our ability to kind of pull this together with our normal program of work plus these stimulus funds, there are some opportunities. I wish I could say that I was really comfortable that as quickly as we're working, they were able to pull this together as smoothly as I'd like to. Being a good bureaucrat, if you gave me a few extra months, we could probably pull this together in a much more seamless fashion than we're doing it now. But we're trying to be extremely responsive to the recognize that there are places that are hurting, and what can we do to put people to work immediately?
Well, and you have been extremely responsive, and the fact that you're able to move to implementation in literally a couple of weeks is astounding, and our hats are off to you, and thank you for trying to get the citizens of this state back to work. You may be a bureaucrat, but you're also a forester. And I know that foresters see things out in the woods, and they see the possibilities rather than, you know, the limits of resources, financial resources, the time constraints, the bureaucracy, and all the things that that both of you have to put up with in the state and federal levels. And I just know that as foresters, you would like to see a healthy forest as much as we would, and I suspect that the discussion that we had on biomass, woody biomass, and what is the end product use of that, rather than burning it, to be putting it to some good end use. If we had a public policy that was one that directed us to sustainability, that you all would only be too happy to be implementing that. If we had the public policy and the financial resources, we could be doing many of these things long term. And much of the problem is, and the reason that we have such poor forest health, no offense, Cal, but it lies principally on the federal forests, is because we as a nation have not decided how we want to manage, to what end we want to manage our federal forests. And when we have that straightened out, then it makes it possible for good folks like you who are professional forests to go in and get the job done, because I absolutely know there's not a forester in this country that would ever want to see any of our forests in the conditions that we've left them. So it's up to all of us to start demanding from Congress that we have a policy that is aimed squarely at health in our forests, and from those healthy forests then derive all the benefits that all of us are looking for: good jobs, long-term jobs, clean water, all of those financial and non-financial benefits. We do very much appreciate your efforts at getting this kicked off. We are all, as Vice Chair Huffman pointed out, advocates not only for our own districts but for the state as well. And I know, Cal, that you said that you can't describe, put your arms around at this point, the money that's going to be coming here to Oregon. But I am wondering if you can describe for us the manner in which or what determines how much money we will be getting here in Oregon. Can you share that with us?
I can take it. Yes, I can, Chairman Witt. I'd be happy to. We first started working on the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act before it was so named back in December. We had put proposals together. We called them growth platforms. We were trying to get to the new administration, talk to them about some things that we thought the Forest Service was uniquely capable of doing if they were so interested, as a way to introduce ourselves to the incoming administration. So as part of that work, we began a national analysis of using Bureau of Census information that could describe economic distress across the country in terms of unemployment. And so we looked at state-level information, we looked at county-level information, both the rates of unemployment in the last couple of years as well as over the past 10, looked at the magnitude of the issue so we could get a scaling in terms of how many people are we talking about when it's this county versus this county. So we have state-level information as well as county information. That information indicates that, as I recollect it, Oregon would rank fourth nationally in unemployment. And when you look at the distribution of the counties that have those kinds of characteristics, and you were to map it, we have those kind of maps, and you, for the sake of the map, color the counties that have the highest unemployment. In Oregon, it's kind of a ring that comes from the southwest and works its way out through the Blue Mountains. It's just, you can just watch the pattern. So to the degree that we could, those are the places where the proposals that came from this region that went back to the Washington process, the national process, came from. We tried to focus the work into those counties, those portions of the state where we see the most hurt and where we have projects that are shovel-ready. That was the other problem. Sometimes it wasn't. You don't have as many shovel-ready projects in those distressed locations because, frankly, we've never oriented our work this way before.
Yeah.
We've looked at, you know, we have this many national forests, they distribute this way, we try to have all of them active and operating, have healthy and strong programs. So sometimes there wasn't a good match. But for the most part, it's based on economic distress and focus in on those counties that we think we can help the most, where there's a national forest presence. The state and private funds that Marvin was more directly involved with have a broader focus because that goes statewide. And that was particularly of interest to the state foresters, particularly in the south and the Midwest and the Northeast, where there aren't very many national forest acres as compared to out west. And so they wanted that leverage capability to look at their states also. So there it's more of a statewide look, state comparison to state in terms of the SNPF funds. But the National Forest System funds are really focused around counties that have national forest acres in them as being the priority. I think Oregon will fare extremely well. We have a great presence here. We have a large number of forests. We have the second largest budget as a region in Oregon and Washington. California is the only region that's larger, and only because they have fire the way they do. So we actually had a very strong program to bring forward because we have been investing in capital improvements and maintenance in terms of the planning, and here was the opportunity to implement. And so we have very strong proposals sitting back that I think will fare extremely well.
Well, thank you very much. That is extremely encouraging. And to that, I state the obvious. The number of total forested acres that we have here in our state, the capacity of our forests, the number of acres that we have that have forest densities that are way too high, the number of major waterways that we have here that need attention there. All of those, I think, are arguments by which, in addition to the unemployment rate, that Oregon should appropriately come out on top of the heap in terms of the money that's being directed to the states. Appreciate your efforts in bringing that money here to Oregon. But each one of us here, you're gonna find very big advocates here for as much money as we can get, putting people back to work, and for sound forest policy. And we're willing to do whatever we can to help you do the jobs that as professional foresters you want to get done. If we get the money here, we're going to do a heck of a good job. And we have a lot of unemployed people out of the industry who have a wide diversity of skills that we can put to work. As Representative Esquivel pointed out, that person who's running that feller buncher could probably be putting logs and large boulders into streams with no additional training at all. Just a ready, deployable workforce here who's just ready to go. Bunch of state representatives that want to see him back to work. And if we get that money out here, then I'll fight Representative Huffman to see whose district that money goes to. So he's going to win out on the federal forest, but I'm going to win out on the state forest. So that's how that goes. Additional questions or comments? Representative Holby.
Well, as long as you guys are arm wrestling, I really appreciate the Forest Service. Has the foresight to look at our economically depressed counties. That's just so important, and not because my county's not listed on there. We have an urban area that helps maintain our unemployment rate. Probably a little. I think we're only at 12 or something like that at this point, but just recognize that even in our Lane County, for example, that I'm speaking of, we have some extremely depressed forest areas, communities, Oak Ridge, Florence, Mapleton, they are just as depressed as probably much of the rest of the state. And I'm sure many of our counties are similarly situated, but really appreciate that that focus on trying to get those depressed areas back up.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you, sir. I asked about the biomass, and I forgot to ask, are there standards set for the thinning? Is it going to be a maximum size of log, or are any logs actually going to come out of the forest and go to a mill, or are they all just going to be dealt with in the forest?
No, it'll be a combination. Okay. Excuse me, Chairman Witt and Vice Chairman Huffman. Forget myself, these processes. We have, these projects are coming out of existing planning documents, and those planning documents have within them a prescription for the stand that you want to have when the work is done. And so it will run the full gamut of little tiny stuff that will get piled and burnt in place all the way up to saw timber that will go to a mill in John Day. It'll be the full gamut. And so
still have a mill in John Day.
Yes, you do. Yeah, I was talking to Dan Bishop and Don Bodwig on Monday, and yeah, they're hanging on by a thread. You're right. If we don't get something going within 4 to 6 months, I'm not sure I could be able to say the same thing. So where we can, we will bring forward projects that, if they're shovel ready, and they have saw timber in them, and they meet a wildland fire mitigation requirement. If you say it with a straight face, then yes, those will come out. Absolutely.
Okay. Additional questions or comments?
Gentlemen, I want to thank you both very, very much. I want to thank you for appearing here today once again on such short notice. I want to thank you for your advocacy, not only for getting good forest health implemented here in Oregon's forest, but also your advocacy for a great number of people in a number of counties are really falling on hard times here. And if either of you ever need some friends to advocate for forest health, you're going to find them right here in the Workforce Development Subcommittee. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just before we get the next group up, I just wanted to say that, you know, it kind of set everyone back about the sudden oak death potential problem we may have, or actually we have now that may spread. But I also want to put into the back of everyone's mind that we also have a wanton waste disease problem coming toward us from Montana. And what that is it's spread through socialization of elk herds.
Uh-huh.
And it will be devastating.
Socialization of what?
Elk herds.
Oh, really?
And we can't control those because, of course, you can't control it, but that will come to Oregon.
And that disease again?
Wanton waste.
Wanton waste, okay.
Kind of like a mad cow.
Okay, very good. All right, next up, I'd like to invite John Asher and Art Pope, please.
I've seen these guys.
Yeah. We have, yes. It's
so
a return
familiar.
Performance.
I'm not sure.
Pat, did you want to come up? Or? Okay.
Was that this year?
Welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you, Sherwitt.
Please decide between yourselves who will proceed.
I guess I will start. Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Asher, and I'm the director of the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, a program housed within the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. I come before you today to provide information on the Oregon Youth Employment Initiative, funded through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. The purpose of the Oregon Youth Employment Initiative is to expand employment opportunities for youth throughout the state of Oregon, while providing much-needed conservation and natural resources project work on public lands. What I did is I just took some talking points out of my the proposal that was created, and then I figured if people had questions, I'd just respond to the questions in that manner. The amount of the Oregon Youth Employment Initiative total is $6.5 million. The Oregon Youth Conservation Corps will be responsible for putting out $6.25 million of that amount. Partners in the Oregon Youth Employment Initiative include the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, Community Colleges and Workforce Development, United States Forest Service, Association of Oregon Counties, Oregon Department of Education, the Business Education Compact, and the Governor's Office. The idea is to identify really high-impact, high-need projects statewide. And we'll do that by working with, at the local level, our local partners will consist of school districts, education service districts, Workforce Investment Act providers, juvenile departments, watershed councils, tribes, volunteer organizations such as Northwest Service Academy and AmeriCorps, and other federal, state, local, and nonprofit organizations, including outdoor schools with the education service districts. We foresee a four-part funding of this program, this initiative. The first step of the program will be spring 2009 and will occur as soon as we get the word till the end of this current school year. The next leg of the table will be summer 2009. The third leg will be the 2009-2010 school year, with the final leg being summer 2010, with the funds expended by September 1st, 2010. The funds are going to be allocated 25% for the school year programs and 75% for summer programs, split 50-50 between 2009 and 2010. Since this current school year is quickly coming to a close, we're going to prorate the amount that we're going to put out this spring and roll that to the following school year. All the funding models that we've used in putting together our proposals are based on a crew leader, which can be a young adult or an older adult, and five youth working an eight-week program and making minimum wage for the youth, and about $12 to $15 an hour on average for a crew leader. And we hope to be able to recruit some teachers and college students to help us out. What will it do for Oregon? We plan on putting at least one to two crews in every county in the state under this initiative. This will be in addition to our current Oregon Youth Conservation Corps programs. And that's really important that we do that. Oregon Youth Conservation Corps funds programs in every county during the state during the summer. We are adding on to those programs. We're not pulling back. We're adding on. We're adding more youth. During the school year, we currently have 25 alternative high school programs we work with. That will be one of the places we initially go to for proposals for the school programs next year. But in areas of high need or high impact projects, we're going to step beyond our traditional partners. We're going to work with organizations and agencies that currently have an infrastructure in place to implement projects where we might not be really strong, or maybe the capacity isn't there. That's one of the reasons we're really working close with some juvenile departments, because their whole structures there, the pay system set up, the vehicles are set up, the tools are there, the staffing is there. We don't want to recreate things. We want to add on, put more people to work. We're also going to hire local coordinators to help out the Forest Service, both at the National Forest level and the Ranger District level. And we haven't got it all the way figured out just how we're going to do it, but we know in some areas, Vice Chair Huffman mentioned Grant County, we're already one of the largest youth employers in that county during the summer. And we will probably have 8 to 10 crews there working with our local partner Training and Employment Consortium. We plan on adding additional crews there, but the Mount Hero National Forest doesn't have the resources to devote somebody specifically for projects. So in that case, that will be one of the areas that we're looking at to get one of these coordinators in that can line out projects, supplies, materials, Forest Service staff that will be providing oversight, etc. We are also going to be hiring a media crew that will document each phase of this project or this initiative. We'll probably have a couple of photojournalists, one working the east side, one working the west side. We will have two individuals that will be developing a website, and we're going to pull it all together and market the heck out of it, because I'm sure that we can do this well. It's in addition to what we're already doing. I'd just like to thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I'm sorry I missed the very first part. Are there two pots of money, or maybe three pots of money, your regular normal pot, which is probably shrinking, and then the pot that we were talking about from the stimulus dollars that CCWD was going to be in charge of, and then is there a third pot based on the forestry money that we've been talking about this morning?
Chair Witt, Vice Chair Huffman, OYCC is funded through the amusement device tax on lottery devices, and that's our little stable pot that we get. We put out relatively few dollars, but we put them out everywhere. The Oregon Youth Employment Initiative total for Oregon right now, and that we consider it phase one because we're hoping phase two will provide an additional $6 million. But this first pot is $6.5 million total. Out of that amount, OYCC will be working with the $6.25 million, and Northwest Youth Corps will be working with that other $250,000 on a separate part of the project. But it is included in that one piece of money that came in initially as a showcase 10% project.
Very good.
Additional?
Yes.
Maybe we should listen to Mr. Pope first, I suppose.
That would be great. Mr. Pope?
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, my name is Art Pope. I'm the Executive Director of Northwest Youth Corps. And I'd just like to say that Northwest Youth Corps fully supports the expansion of youth employment opportunities for youth. We believe that outdoor activity builds physical fitness, promotes stewardship of our public lands, and we believe that an outdoor team-based work environment fosters individual growth, builds work skills, and promotes a lifelong work ethic, all important building blocks of America's future workforce. We highly endorse the Oregon Youth Initiative and the opportunity to put hundreds of more kids to work this coming year. Northwest Youth Corps has 25 years of experience putting kids to work in the woods. That's what we do. We have the training program, safety protocols, and mobilization ability to put new programs into place quickly. We know there is nothing more important than workplace safety, and we offer the Oregon Youth Initiative our decades of on-the-ground youth corps leadership experience, particularly in the safety and mobilization areas. We have the ability to place more kids to work on April 11th. If we had the jobs, if we had the commitment from our partners, we could place more kids. We're turning away youth that are looking for opportunities right now.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Yes, Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask a question. I recognize the OYCC is receiving this money, and then it's going out listening to your plan for implementation of spreading this money around. And I know traditionally a lot of monies that come with earmarks that these are for at-risk youth. And one of the things that I've noticed, I guess, when I look at these programs is that, and it sounds like you're planning to expanding those opportunities county by county, perhaps, for at-risk youth. But I just, from my perspective, I think it's extremely important that opportunities are available just as much, if not maybe more, for youth that have genuine interest in these summertime opportunities and not just at-risk youth. You know, it's sort of a preventative measure, if nothing else, so they don't end up in our judicial system, that they have something to do productive and to get kids interested in those future potential jobs that we've been talking about here, and just out exposure to work and exposure to, I guess, a more vocational type of life, which I don't think kids really get much of an opportunity to do. essentially. And, you know, so I hope you work closely with Northwest Youth Corps and other organizations that provide those opportunities for regular youth that aren't at risk yet. You know, I mean, I think that's just so important, and I, you know, it's not that I diminish the importance of getting opportunities for at-risk youth as well, but I think it's important to make it a broader approach to youth in general. And so, you know, I think that organizations like Northwest Youth Corps, which, you know, operate all over the state on projects and have kids from all over the state in their programs, is really a great model. And I look forward to hearing back on those types of partnerships to make opportunities available to, you know, a wide spectrum of youth.
Chair Witt, Representative Hovey, we're really lucky on this pot of money from the Forest Service. OYCC has a statutory responsibility to serve 75% at-risk youth or disadvantaged. And we have our own definition, and it is pretty broad. But this particular pot of money does not come with those eligibility requirements. We will be working with, we work extensively with Northwest Youth Corps, both during the school year and during the summer year. I think Northwest Youth Corps was probably one of the first programs OYCC ever funded, or helped to fund, I should say. But with this pot of money, there aren't those eligibility requirements. And right now, with the economy the way it is, I would charge that any kid that wants a job that doesn't have one is at risk or disadvantaged.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter how much their parents make, because that's their parents' money. It's not the youth's money. The experience is the kid will not be receiving that experience. And so this will give us a great opportunity to go out to these new partners. There's a lot of other money coming into the state for specific disadvantaged at-risk youth programs with kids with different types of barriers. This is where we can go well beyond that. We can go to a Rachel Carson school, really high-level learners, and we can provide them the opportunity to do a lot of the projects that they're currently doing as part of their school, but actually get paid for it.
Thank you.
Very good. Representative Dembro, followed by Representative Esquivel.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have a couple. And, you know, just to follow up on Representative Holvey's point, which I respect, but I also fear that, given this influx of money, we still want to deploy that money where it's going to be most needed. And I do think that to a great extent we still want to maintain a focus on at-risk youth, as opposed to spreading it so widely that it's going to be thinned out. And I just wonder if you could just remind us what your metrics are for at-risk.
Chair Witt, Representative Dembro. I wouldn't attempt to quote it verbatim, but basically our at-risk definition is a youth that is unable to meet the expectations socially, economically, or educationally of their community. And the reason that it is so broad is because Oregon's a very different place. We have gang issues in Malheur County, and we have extremely high poverty up the San Ynez Canyon, and it's just a different picture. Each community has a different set of needs and a different set of expectations, so it does vary some. We still have our, and we will continue through this process. A lot of youth that you wouldn't consider to be necessarily at risk by a federal definition really are at risk. A lot of youth, most youth at one time or another, are at risk, whether it's from drug abuse or other issues. And, we do the best we can. We can always do better.
So what do you see your share of the dollars going towards, you know, in terms of the actual increased capacity for the summer?
Chairman Witt, Representative Dembro, we feel like should we have the project base and the resources available, we could serve another 300 to 500 youth this coming year. We don't know what our share of the resources might be. We certainly put in requests with our partners to allow us to expand services, but at this point we have no idea what might be available. We don't have any specific acts or legislation or dispensations of dollars that we can count on at this point.
Do you have a sense of the timeline you're looking at?
Our timeline would be either related to finalization of the Oregon Youth Initiative and anything that might happen under that, or what would be happening from the Forest Service, as Cal was saying, when they got money back from D.C. about a project base. If they get word back from Washington that approves suitable work projects, then we're hoping that our project sponsors on the forests will ask us to take care of some of that work for them.
Representative Esquivel?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think what we all agree upon is, and I think we're doing some things today that will help alleviate this. One is that I think the biggest part of our problem with our youth summer employment is us, the legislators. We pass so many stringent laws not to allow these kids to work that we've made it near impossible for them to work in the private sector. And shame on us. We had the great intent, we just didn't understand the consequences of that action. I think we're taking some steps. I believe there's some bills in this time to change that, which I fully support. In fact, I believe I signed on to some of those bills. But I also think, and you gentlemen in front of me will probably, I assume, nod, we could double or triple or quadruple our funding, and it still wouldn't be enough. We have so many kids that need assistance. And unfortunately, our society has gotten to the point where in some cases, we've lost that family nucleus. We've lost that family parental involvement. And that's how we get astray, I think, not only in our schools, but also with our youth themselves. I think that what we do is good, and I think it's great. And like Mr. Asher said, but we could always do better. I think we all agree upon that. I think that what we need to do is we need to look at a long-range solution for these kids. We have the kids in OICC that we know, it's not a question of, but we know that we'll have to deal with them in the future if we don't deal with them now. We just know that. We also have potential children in your organization that we know sometime we may have to deal with them as well. And it's very sad, but if we could keep our kids busy during the summertime and let them work and let them earn some money and let them have the responsibility of a job, but more importantly, my granddaughter just started working at a Burger King. And that doesn't sound like much, but she's 16 years old. She works three nights a week for 3 hours a night. But you should see the look on her face when she got her first paycheck. It's having a job. It's having that responsibility of having that job and the ability to go perform. But more importantly, someone's paying you for what you do. And that is such a great feeling. And we need to encourage this, but more importantly, we need to expand it in the state of Oregon because our youth is the one that's paying for our legislation. Our youth is the one that's paying for us not acting.
I have Representative Holby.
Just a quick comment. I appreciate those comments, because I mean, it's so to the point. You know, we just listened to the Forest Service speaking, you know, about our economically depressed counties, and it's pretty widespread. And I would argue that our youth throughout all of those counties are right now, because of the economics of Oregon, are at risk. You know, if their parents happen to be laid off and things aren't kind of go downhill in the family unit at that point. You know, I think that our state's at risk, and certainly I think our youth across this state are at risk. So, thank you.
Well, committee members, I just heard Mr. Pope say that he could put several hundred additional youth to work this summer. And Art, what do you need? Have you applied to the Forest Service? Is there something that would assist you in those efforts? How could we help get several hundred more youth to work this summer?
Well, we really are just, dependent on financial resources to get those kids out there, just like anybody else when it comes to hiring people. Hiring kids is the same kind of process as hiring adults. We need those resources. So we hope to be working with John and the Oregon Youth Initiative to
Great.
Get some of those resources, put some of those kids to work. And we will continue to work with the Forest Service and state forestry and state parks and anybody else that has a land base and a project base suitable for those kids. The opportunity to work closer with state agencies and do work that is already funded and already needs to be done will allow us to serve more youth. And so state parks has been a great partner. State forestry has been a great partner. The opportunity to expand those partnerships with funded projects allows us to do them with kids.
Great. Do you have an ability to act as a contractor with the Forest Service or the state?
We have a participating agreement with the Forest Service,
uh-huh.
and we have a purchasing agreement with the state of Oregon. So both of those documents are in place, and both can be implemented fairly readily and painlessly.
Mr. Chair, just to drill down a little bit, the handout that we got from the Forest Service states that there's $6.5 million available for the Youth Employment Initiative through the ARRA funds. And so, John, how much for the projects that you laid out with your 75%, 25%, how much of that are you projecting you need for your program? Do you have a budget for it?
Chair Witt, Representative Dimbrough, our budget, and when we started developing the proposal, was based upon what are the match requirements. There weren't match requirements. There wasn't the eligibility requirements. So we started thinking, how are we going to put this out to where it looks the same to everyone? So we quickly decided that we were going to pay every kid minimum wage. No stipends this time. It's just not fair when a kid's making $6 an hour, working beside a kid making $8.40 an hour, no matter what the reasons. That's just, we have a minimum wage law in this state, and we decided that that was going to be imperative. We went, worked with the Business Education Compact to find out what they pay college undergrad interns. What does a junior or a senior in college majoring in forestry, what will they make during the summer per hour? And they said, $12 to $15 an hour. And that's what our partners said, yeah, that looks fair. So we're looking at, as far as the funding and how many youth, it's everyone that we can get within the parameters that the program itself will call for. The Forest Service acknowledged that there's going to be projects that need to be done, that we're going to have to purchase the supplies and materials. And anything that we charge towards this money comes out of what we could put on the ground to youth. I figure 1,000 to 1,500 kids is probably what we'll work with. As the timelines get shorter, we might have twice the kids, but actually working half the hours. The total hours would be the same, but we'll see a lot more kids served. It just won't be for that long period of time. Our base system that we were looking at, because the summer is where the majority of the money is going, was an 8-week program with 5 youth and 1 crew leader.
And so, again, if I could just follow up. So what do you see as what that will cost you know, out of this $6.5 million.
Chair Witt, Representative Dimbro, what I did as me and my staff developed a common cost calculator with no match required, and we put those five kids, their minimum wage plus the 17%, which was an average for taxes, fringe, and workman's comp. The crew leader wages, we put in some for personal supplies, hard hats and gloves, a little bit in for materials and supplies or tools. A large chunk is actually transportation, because that's a huge issue. If you have to go down to Hertz and rent a vehicle for an 8-week program, it could be from $2,500 to $4,000. If it's over that, you're talking 2 youth. So for a basic 5 youth, 1 crew leader with a vehicle, it comes up to between $29,000 and $32,000. To hire those 5 kids and an adult or an older youth crew leader for an 8-week program.
Mm-hmm. So again, I'm sorry, but just as you're trying to figure out how many crews you can send out, how much of that $6.5 million, three and a quarter for wildlife fire management and 3.25 for capital improvements and maintenance, would be your share, so we know how much is left over for the other groups, if any.
Chair Witt, Representative Dimbro, all of the money will be flowing out onto projects that are already being identified currently. We've asked as part of what we need just to hold back that won't go to the field, maybe hiring through a third party a couple of college interns to help us provide oversight and make sure things, reporting, monitoring, things like that, are being done on the ground. But as far as holding it back, our local programs will maybe need a little assistance in cutting the paychecks, a few more hours for their staff, but it's basically going to be that entire amount. We're not going to say we're going to keep 25%, mm-hmm. to run our office. Mm-hmm. It's in addition to what we're already doing. It's more work for us, but that's what we're going to do.
So you see yourself needing that full amount then for your programs?
We'll just spend it all out.
Great.
Representative Dimbro.
Yeah. I only ask that because, in this handout it says the partners are Job Corps, Northwest Youth Corps, and State of Oregon for these projects across the state. But you see, your projects as being kind of the lead projects in this.
Chair Witt, Representative Dimbro, everyone that is identified by our partners is wanting to participate. As long as the money holds out, we will serve those youth. I've had a lot of calls in the last few weeks from people that have never called before that would like to participate. And I'd like them to participate. We'll start looking at, do they have the infrastructure? Can we partner them up with another existing program? Can we funnel their youth in to an existing program and save some money that way?
Okay, thanks, Tom. Thanks, Mr.
Representative Holby.
I was just listening to this, and so I guess I'm just a little bit confused. How many youth did OYCC directly hire last season, for example?
Chair Witt,
and not contracted out with other groups or partnering with, but I mean, your infrastructure is OYCC specifically.
We did not hire any.
Any
youth.
So your whole program is basically working with other partners, so this $6.5 million isn't youth that you're directly hiring and running programs. You're partnering with other organizations who already do that.
Chair Witt, Representative Holby, that is correct. We fund local programs based on an open RFP process.
Right.
We sell a model, and we sell our experience in working with partnerships, helping people create programs. We work with our 25 alternative high schools that have a broad variety of oversight agencies, whether it's a local high school, an ESD, maybe a Workforce Investment Act provider that has an alternative school. They will apply to us for funding, meeting the criteria that we expect that was laid out in our legislative responsibilities.
I
and
see.
Then we fund them.
So follow up. Yeah, so you basically just administer the monies and distribute it or appropriate it to different organizations to
Correct.
Do specific projects. And so your cost figure of $32,000 for a 5-member crew for 8 weeks is I'm curious what if I can, Mr. Chair, what. Whether that's similar to your organization, Mr. Pope. Caught you off guard, huh?
You did. Chairman went.
See the numbers going through his head.
I had to do some quick mental math. Yeah. In round numbers, because you did catch me kind of flat-footed on that one. As a residential program, we're providing 7-day-a-week, 24-hour-a-day supervision for youth with a ongoing education and youth development model. We will serve 20 kids for roughly $80,000.
Okay. I guess that sort of answers my questions. I was just sort of getting a little confused because I know some organizations own their own vehicles, and you're talking about renting them, and just thinking about all the different costs floating around. So there is quite a range in some of the partners and what their costs are. I would assume from your figures and
sure,
listening to his.
Representative Hovey, that's one of the reasons knowing. It's the cost will be different from a residential and to a non-residential program because you do have the supervision. You have to have somebody supplying the youth. That's why we did include that wording in here so we can judge those based on residential programs and not necessarily dollar for dollar against a non-residential program.
Okay. Thanks.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that we have an apple and an orange here. And the other thing is that OICC is actually the one that contracts with people. But more importantly, getting back to a comment that the Vice Chair made was that we like to see the youth come from that county. That's real important, we feel. I believe 2 years ago, we were the highest employer for youth in, I think, Wheeler County, were we not?
Well,
it wasn't us.
Grant County.
But we did allocate funding for a local organization to do that. And I think those are where we're getting at. Your alternative schools, different at-risk kids. But we like to keep that within that county. So Wheeler County kids are working on Wheeler County projects. Lake County kids are working on Lake County projects and on down the line to every county. And we're in every county in the state of Oregon. So it's a little different thing. We do not personally hire these kids, but we do work with the people that do.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen, certainly appreciate your efforts of your organizations and your board members and the folks that work with you as well as your partners in putting Oregon's youth to work. And let's just hope that we have enough stimulus money to be able to make this a truly meaningful summer for a whole lot of kids. Thank you very much.
Chair Witt.
I'm going to...
ask if there's anyone in the public that wishes to comment on any of the federal stimulus money that's coming into Oregon's forests, be they federal, state, or private forests. Come on forward. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Chair Witt. Committee, for the record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters Industrial Council. First off, I want to thank you for a very dedicated meeting. Hopefully you take this back to your respective caucuses and onto the House floor. I see right now today we have 4.5 million acres of timber that need help right now. And then I passed out the work source unemployment sheet. If you read that bottom line, that tells you exactly what's going on in this state. I think forestry work is going to be one of the key programs to bring Oregon out of the economic slump that we're in. And again, I appreciate you, Chair Witt, your work, the work of the... I couldn't have put together better questions. And I want to thank your staff for getting this rounded up. So, thank you.
Well, thank you, Bill. And, if it hadn't been for you in bringing this whole issue up, we wouldn't have been holding this hearing. So, a lot of thanks goes to you. I know you did a lot of background research. I know you made a whole lot of phone calls in terms of interesting people about this issue. And truly appreciate your support because... our biggest asset is in most of our state are our forests, we aren't managing them the way we should be. And if we were, there'd be a heck of a lot more employment opportunities. So we'd have a lot better forests, and we'd have a lot better work and social economic benefits as well as environmental coming off those forests as a result. Mike.
Chair Witt, committee, for the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I'm the political director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. And I have a question of the Brainy committee. Are you guys going to go on a tour of the forests in Oregon at some point?
Well, Mike, actually there have been a couple of instances here already this session that we would have liked to have taken a couple of tours, and some of the educational opportunities and apprenticeship and those sorts of things. And unfortunately, our state's budget is such that we simply cannot afford to be taking field trips because... not only is it costly in terms of gas and vehicles, but even more so, it's costly when we move as a subcommittee. Along with us has to go the recording equipment and all that sort of stuff, and it's just too expensive, unfortunately. So it's a strictly a budget consideration. I wish we could.
Well, the reason I ask is I've learned a tremendous amount from my cohort here, Bill, and to the point, there's a program on KBOO Radio, Labor Hour, and one of the hosts was talking about how he planted trees in the 80s. And I said, you need to have Bill Cluding on your radio program, because in the idea of what he thought was doing the good thing, the federal forests had to be thinned so badly back, it took him by surprise. You know, it's 20-some years ago that he did that. Watching the History Channel one night, they talk about Scandinavia, where they have cultivated the forest, same forest for over 400 years. I mean, there's things we need to do to be more sustainable in the resources that we have in the state. One idea I came up with, and I say it tongue-in-cheek, I came before the Rules Committee, and they're talking about bringing the troops back home. So I told them my answer is this, that if I was the governor of the state, I would bring the troops home immediately, furlough them for 30 days, put them in the federal forest, thin them, go to war with the United States, sue for peace, and perhaps get twice the stimulus money.
I don't know. We could be a war-torn state.
I don't know if it'd work, but... you wanted to be a governor like and leave a legacy.
Mike is one of the better ideas ever.
Thanks for sure. Consider that.
Chairwhip, that's plan B.
Thank you, Chairwhip.
Gentlemen, always entertaining. Thank you so much, and certainly appreciate your support of this committee and jobs and everything that you do. I don't know if there's a committee meeting that we've held that you two guys haven't been here. Certainly appreciate it, Representative Esquivel.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, thank you. But you know, we're going to continue to have this problem as long as we let the minority lock us out of our forest. We're going to have the continual problem of not being able to maintain those forests, not being able to harvest that forest, and not being able to create good family wage jobs. As long as this society lets the minority dictate to it, and I always use the example, the tail in this country is wagging the dog, and it's time that we stop that.
Chairwhip.
Chairwhip.
Yeah, I'm losing it today. Representative Esquivel, that's exactly the point. We're paying for the sins of our forefathers and the wishes of the fathers to come, so to speak. And that's why I asked the question about a tour. People need to be educated on the resources that we have in this state. A lot of people, including myself, that came to the state, I thought I was going to live off a brook and go trout fishing in the morning, you know, before I went to work. It isn't the case. People need to understand what the forests really are. It is a resource.
Thank you, Mike. A point well taken. And you know, your suggestion of a field trip, I only wish we could, because I took a field trip and I saw the bundling of jobs that the Forest Service was doing as a pilot program on the Umatilla Forest, and I watched them take folks who had been unemployed in the forest products industry and had lost their jobs and probably had no hope of going back and getting a mill job again, but they had the skills that were necessary to go out there and do forest restoration, to do ecosystem restoration. And I saw efforts not only by the Forest Service to bundle those jobs, but to cooperate with the State Department of Forestry so that when the jobs were being done on the federal forest, they'd have several lined up with the State Department of Forestry just down the road, and they could move not only from job to job, but from, you know, different levels of government, and they kept people working for a couple of years around the calendar. It was they were looking at 12-month-a-year jobs, not 3-month-a-year jobs. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to address Mr. Sullivan, and Mr. Kluding knows because I've been on a tour with him specifically on a pilot project of sorts of forestry management. But I love to take tours in our forests, and generally do at least once a year with the National Forest. But you know, as Representative Esquivel was saying something, it just kind of popped into my head. I was trying to go on a tour with a couple of people, but we ran into a gate, and you know, it's unfortunate that sometimes when you want to take a tour that you're locked out by a private forestry company and you can't even get to the public forest. So anyway, just side comment.
Representative Dumbrow, did you?
No, I just wanted to thank you for that perspective, Chair Witt. You know, I'm really fascinated by this concept of bundling jobs to make them more sustainable. And, you know, one of my concerns is that we do so much in this country well in response to emergencies. And I see this, you know, this stimulus package being yet another example of disaster relief.
Yes.
When, you know, if only we could have taken that pot of money and used it in a more investing kind of manner. You know, we may have a lot of jobs that are going to be created, and it's really important that that happen, but then they're going to disappear, and we're back to square one. And I'm just, you know, it's very frustrating.
It is very frustrating, and I know, because I know Marvin Brown,
I don't know Cal nearly as well, but I know that it is extremely frustrating for professional foresters. It's in their blood. They want to go out and do the right thing on the ground, and they want to see forest health, and they want to make sure that we are deriving as much out of those forests as we can, and that they are managed in a sustainable manner, and we have not decided as a nation how we're going to move forward doing that. And Representative Dembrough, you make a very good point that we do an excellent job in terms of responding to crises, but I almost think we've developed a crises mentality where we go in, you know, and we save the day with a crisis, but we don't have the long-term plan. It isn't sustainable because we're not taking the long-term look, and we have not, as a nation, decided that it is critically important for us to invest in our nation's resources, because if we sustain our resources, they're going to sustain the rest of society, and not only for the short term, but for the long term. Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I guess my greatest hope out of this temporary infusion of money would be that we can have statewide models for the Ninth Circuit Court to look at and go, this is how the forest should be managed, and they can knock off their crap about siding up with the minority that's wagging the dog, and we can get back to managing the forest properly. Or get too managed. There would be arguments whether we have or not, but I'm not going to get into that. But at least we can have these models to go 2 years from now, okay, there's less chance of wildfire, there's better health, the trees are healthier, they're not diseased, the insects aren't coming in, you know. And so I'm hopeful that this money will go into setting up these statewide models. I know we've got a few models spotted around the state, but hopefully this will be a broad base showing to the Ninth Circuit that this is how they should look and live.
What a victory that would be.
That's fine. I don't totally disagree with Representative Huffman, but I think, you know, part of the, and Mr. Kluding brought this forward several sessions ago, is a whole Jobs in the Woods program that basically addresses the issues that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal has by including habitat restoration, by including, you know, those sorts of things that are necessary for a healthy forest. And you address their issues at the same time by having that bundling effect of our jobs, that when you're done cutting the forest or thinning it, you know, you go back, you replant, you do the habitat restoration, the stream restoration, and you got a year-round job. And so
they have been shown. I know. Yeah.
And that's that whole concept of sustainability. I learned that from Marvin's predecessor, Jim Brown, who's an internationally recognized expert on sustainability. And the day I finally understood it is the day the light went on, and I have never looked at the world the same way since. And Mike, you're exactly right. There's some more people going out in the forest and getting to understand what constitutes true sustainability would be infinitely helpful. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think what bothers me is that, one, is that we are not harvesting our harvest. Two, it has a detrimental effect to everything involved, habitat, stream restoration, the whole gamut. But I think it's an actual crime when we have a fire like we had in the Biscuit Fire and actually pulled nothing out of there. If it would have been up to me and I would have been king for the day, we'd have been taking those trees out while they were still smoldering, because that was such a waste of good material. It was such a waste because it wouldn't have hurt a thing to go in there and harvest that wood. So that's the crimes that I see that's happening to us. The other thing is, when we do decide to thin a forest and or do a selective cut, we're tied up in litigation forever, so they're using our whole system against us.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much. I think our subcommittee has some of its best discussions every time you guys come up and testify. So for that, certainly appreciate it. Kevin, if you would, please, a brief summary of coming events.
Chairman, members of the committee, the never-ending saga of House Bill 2732 is coming to a theater near you on Tuesday, or at least this subcommittee. We will once again consider amendments that are floating by. I'm really trying to minimize the sarcasm, but I think I've already crossed the threshold. So. I think I'm way off the reservation. I'm hoping not to see a pink slip on my cubicle upstairs when we return. That being said, the bill will be coming back for your consideration on Tuesday. And the long-awaited arrival of 2398, we are hoping and I think guardedly optimistic that we will have something to consider the following week on Tuesday and or Thursday. So that's something I know. And the goal right now is we've got some language worked out for most of it. LC, we need to get them to sign off on it, and then I know it's the we would like to get those distributed so that people know what's coming. So that is hot on the burner, and it is moving forward. So
thank you very much, and an admonishment to the committee. The bill is coming back to us on Tuesday, and we are all advocates for workforce development, and I certainly appreciate everyone's enthusiasm. And unfortunately, we are in an economic climate where minimalism will probably be beneficial on Tuesday. Anything else for the good of the order? Seeing, hearing none, we stand adjourned until Tuesday. Thank you very much.